And good morning, good morning. That was our signal. Coffee with Decoder, episode 19 is beginning. Thank you for being here today. We've got some questions to go over. Perhaps we'll get to all of the ones on my list, and we're eager to give out a mug and have a mugging today for somebody who asked one of these questions. So I'm going to jump right in and start in Pennsylvania. Paula, this question comes from Mary Beth, and she's working in an inpatient rehab. She says, is uremic neuropathy an appropriate etiologic diagnosis in rehab if the patient has diabetes but never had neuropathy until their kidneys fail?
Okay, I think I understand the question, maybe the intent of the question, and it likely has to go back to the association of diabetes to other conditions. So if I understand the question correctly, yes, uremic neuropathy could be an appropriate etiologic diagnosis. But, of course, the coding would depend on documentation from the physician. The ICD-10 rules for diabetes would require the association of the condition to the diabetes and the combo code reported if the physician did not document that the conditions were not associated to each other. So remember, in the old days, the physician had to document that conditions were associated, and now he has to say they were not. Now, if the patient's, there's some other considerations here. We did a little research. If the patient's kidney failure were chronic, the appropriate codes for diabetes with chronic kidney failure and the stage would be reported secondarily. We recommend, of course, querying the physician if the information isn't documented regarding the association of the conditions of the uremic neuropathy and the diabetes. So here's what our research reflects. We dug a little bit deeper. Uremic neuropathy just is defined as a type of neuropathy caused by an increase, of course, in the uremic toxins in the blood. Those toxins, urine, usually removes them from the body when the kidneys are functioning properly. The severity of the uremic neuropathy is directly linked to the severity of the kidney failure. If the kidney failure is chronic, the failure and the uremic neuropathy would be associated to the diabetes because your rule of automatic association of that diabetes to the chronic kidney disease. If the kidney failure is acute, uremic neuropathy could be pretty serious. If there's no chronic kidney failure, it may be appropriate to report that uremic neuropathy as not associated to the diabetes. However, in this case, best practice is to query that physician regarding the association or lack of it. You guys may know that there's several conditions that cause kidney failure that make it more likely for a patient to develop uremic neuropathy, and that is, of course, diabetes and then two other, systemic lupus and hepatic failure. So thank you for your question, Mary Beth in Pennsylvania. Hope that answered it and gave you some clarification.
Thank you, Paula. Now we have our anonymous question. Okay, this person also works in an inpatient rehab, and they're asking about multiple payer requirements. What is your understanding of the Medicare requirements for documentation, such as pre-admission assessment, physician post-admission evaluation and plan of care, and initial assessment, such as nursing and therapy, when a patient converts from primary insurance coverage by commercial carrier to Medicare FFS in the middle of their inpatient rehab stay?
Okay. Pam, that means Medicare fee-for-service is the FFS.
Okay.
FFS. The best practice is that documentation meets CMS requirements in all cases. If CMS reviews that record, they will expect that all required elements are present beginning with the pre-admission screen.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, good. We're doing great. We might get to all the questions on my list today. This one's from Jill in Alabama, and I believe this is a hospital, but I'm going to read it out, and I'm sure you'll be able to tell. My question is related to coding of secondary diagnoses when the patient is terminal. In this case, the patient comes in with a large hypertensive intracerebral hemorrhage, is intubated in the ED, the scans show cerebral edema. When the family arrives, the decision is made to do a DNR, terminally extubate, and provide comfort care. Acute respiratory failure, the need for airway protection, and cerebral edema are documented. No steroids or mannitol are given due to the patient's terminal condition. Some coders use the MCCs and others do not. since the cerebral edema was not treated, some coders will not code it. Other times they will. Also, if airway protection is stated, then the ARF is not coded. One function of our job is to seek higher SOI and ROM for death charts, so this is an issue for us. Any insight in coding of secondary diagnoses in terminal patients when the condition is present but not treated? Thank you.
Okay, yeah, that is from a hospital because she was talking about the emergency department. Of course, a DNR is do not resuscitate. And I'm just saying that for the folks on the line that may not have known those acronyms. And then as Pam is our techie, so she doesn't have a medical background. So ARF is acute respiratory failure. And then, of course, severity of illness. So the question is, you know, the patient had acute respiratory failure and cerebral edema, and they basically were not treated. And so the question is, would we report them? So the official rules for reporting outpatient services, and we're got this patient in the ED, are to code all documented conditions that coexist at the time of the encounter or visit and require or affect patient care, treatment, or management. And then it goes on to say, do not code conditions that were previously treated or no longer exist. However, history codes may be used as secondary codes if the historical condition or family history has an impact on the current care or influences treatment. So based on that statement alone, if the physician documents the condition as impacting the care of that patient, I could certainly see a valid argument for reporting those conditions to describe the true severity of illness of that patient's condition, which ultimately led to death. So from that perspective, yes, I would report them. And that is the ICD-10 guideline. If you want to know where I was reading from, that came straight out of ICD-10 manual in the guideline section. So it's all conditions requiring or affecting patient treatment or management.
Thank you. Oh, good. Now we have time for my last question on my list today. I've got another inpatient rehab question. This one's from Carla in Florida. And she says, the patient is admitted to rehab after a bilateral parietal occipital stroke with left hemiplegia, imaging studies showing petechial hemorrhage at the stroke area. Patient cleared for full anticoagulation from the neurologist. Would the petechial hemorrhage constitute coding as a hemorrhagic CVA? What codes would we use on the UB, and what codes would we use on the PI?
Oh, well, thank you, Carla, for that question. Yes, our research reflects that a hemorrhagic infarct or a hemorrhagic transformation of an infarct occurs in approximately one-third of the cases of ischemic stroke. So when an infarct is immediately followed by the occurrence of petechial hemorrhage in the same arterial territory, the diagnosis of hemorrhagic infarct is made. As far as coding, let's look at the options first for the IRF-PI. And we had a lot of IRF questions this week, so we wanted to make sure and address the ones that look the most detailed, I think. The most details you have provided in the question refers the coder to use the unspecified intracerebral hemorrhage code as the etiologic diagnosis, which is I-61.9. Without further description from the physician as to whether the stroke is localized or without query to further determine the location is cortical or subcortical, the unspecified code is reported. For the UB04, the appropriate principal diagnosis would be the focus of treatment, which is typically, not always, but it's typically that residual hemiparesis, which is reported with the appropriate code from the I-69 range. Now, I want to make another point, and the reason we included this question today for you, Carla, one of the reasons, is because we have a lot of questions about how to code strokes in inpatient rehab, how to put it on the IRF-PI versus how to put it on the claim form. The acute codes for the residuals are reported on the IRF-PI as the late effects. So most of those late effect codes you'll see are codes that start with the letter R. When you have a new acute stroke and there was no old previous stroke, the IRF pie will look like that original acute admission for the stroke. So your acute stroke would be your etiologic, and those, what we call the acute residuals. I don't really think that's the proper term, but what we call those acute residuals, usually starting with the letter R, would be reported as comorbidities on the IRF pie. But the UB04, all of the residuals are reported with the I-69 code for that new stroke. Of course, that could change a little bit if the patient had an old stroke and a new stroke, so it's going to look a little weird on the IRF pie where you have both I-69 codes and those R codes or other codes. And they're typically R codes, but I know there are some other letters that they start with as well. So, Pam, that wraps up, I think, all the questions that we have for today.
Yes. So I am stirring up the names in my hat on my desk, and the winner is Mary Beth from Pennsylvania. So I'll be reaching out to you today and find out where to send your mug. And thank you, everyone, for supporting Coffee with Dakota, for sending in your questions, and for dialing in today. The next episode, episode 20, will begin at 10:10 Eastern on September the 11th. Thank you for being a part of Coffee with Dakota.